Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Cost of Compliance Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 24, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Michigan v. Environmental Protection Agency. The question in this case is whether the Environmental Protection Agency was acting unreasonably when it did not consider the costs of compliance in determining whether it is appropriate to regulate hazardous air pollutants emitted by electric utilities. To discuss the case, we have Jonathan Adler, who is a Johann Verheim Memorial Professor of Law and the Director of the Center for Business Law and Regulation at the Case Western Reserve University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Adler.
Great. Well, thank you. Happy to talk about this case today, styled as Michigan versus EPA, also at times has been referred to as Utility Air Regulatory Group versus EPA or National Mining Association versus EPA, because there were quite a few petitions for certiorari filed by several different groups, three of which were accepted for the case that was heard yesterday by the court. The case involves a challenge to the Environmental Protection Agency's decision to regulate emissions of mercury as hazardous air pollutants when they are emitted from oil and coal-fired power plants under Section 112 of the Clean Air Act. This rule is, by all accounts, one of the costliest regulations in the Environmental Protection Agency's history, so it's no surprise that it has sparked significant controversy and litigation. And the particular issue in this case that the court accepted certiorari on is, and this phrasing of the question was of the court's own devising, it was not the phrasing that was suggested by any of the petitioners, is whether the Environmental Protection Agency unreasonably refused to consider costs in determining whether it is appropriate to regulate hazardous air pollutants emitted by electric utilities. And as that question suggests, the EPA, when deciding to regulate mercury emissions from power plants, concluded that it would not consider the costs of such regulation in making that threshold decision, and that is the primary basis upon which the rule is being challenged now. Just a little bit of background. First, it's just interesting to note that this is the third Clean Air Act case in the past 2 years heard by the Supreme Court. The court heard two a year ago. It heard the EME Homer City case, otherwise known as the Casper case, because it involved a challenge to the rule that was controlling cross-state air pollution. In that case, the Supreme Court upheld EPA's regulation by a vote of 6-2, with both the Chief Justice and Justice Kennedy joining the more liberal justices to uphold EPA's regulation there. And then the court also heard the case of UARG, or Utility Air Regulatory Group, versus EPA last term, involving a challenge to EPA's handling of greenhouse gas emission regulations under the Clean Air Act. There, the EPA got a split decision, losing 5-4 on the question of whether or not the EPA could adopt a tailoring rule and rewrite numerical thresholds in the statute to accommodate regulating greenhouse gases from stationary sources, but prevailing 7-2 on its ability to nonetheless reach most of such stationary source emissions of greenhouse gases. So last year, the EPA won one case and drew the other, got a draw in the other. The question is whether or not they will do as well here. As mentioned, this case is about EPA's decision to regulate mercury emissions from power plants under Section 112, finding and EPA's in particular its conclusion that it is, quote, appropriate and necessary to regulate such emissions. That is the standard the statute sets forth. The Obama administration, in making this determination, was effectively completing an effort begun under the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration, as it was leaving, issued a finding to trigger the regulation of mercury emissions from power plants, but that finding was then set aside by the Bush administration. That Bush administration action setting aside the finding was subsequently thrown out by the U.S. Court of Appeals by the D.C. Circuit, and then the Obama administration reinstituted the Clinton administration's finding that it would be appropriate and necessary to regulate mercury emissions. And the basis for that EPA gave is that it concluded that mercury emissions from power plants, despite the existence of other emission controls on power plants, that are designed to control other types of emissions, that mercury emissions from power plants remain significant and pose a risk to public health, and that there are controls available that could be used to reduce such emissions. One thing the EPA said it would not consider is the potential cost of the regulation, and that's controversial because it's estimated that these regulations will cost approximately $9 billion, or $9.6 billion is the annual cost that has been suggested. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit upheld the EPA's rule 2-1. The majority of the D.C. Circuit panel that heard the case concluded that the word appropriate was sufficiently ambiguous that EPA could interpret it to preclude consideration of costs. Judge Brett Kavanaugh dissented from that portion of the D.C. Circuit opinion, and I would not be surprised if Judge Kavanaugh's dissent was one of the things that encouraged the court to accept cert in this case. There was no circuit split. This is the type of issue for which it's virtually impossible to have a circuit split because rules of national application promulgated under the Clean Air Act can only be challenged in the D.C. Circuit. The argument yesterday was slightly longer than normal, 90 minutes. It featured two-on-two. There were two advocates arguing on each side. Challenging the EPA rule, you had William Brownell representing the utility or regulatory group, basically representing the private industry petitioners, and you had Aaron Lindstrom, Solicitor General of the State of Michigan, on behalf of the state petitioners, and then defending the EPA, you had Solicitor General Donald Varelli, who tends to take the most important and high-profile cases for the federal government, and then Paul Smith, representing a set of industry respondents defending the EPA rule. Some of the issues that came up in the oral argument that are worth highlighting, one is just the textual issue of how the phrase appropriate and necessary should be interpreted, whether it's a term should be seen as a term of art or whether each word needs to be have its own independent meaning. One of the arguments made by the petitioners is that insofar as EPA stressed the health effects and health risks of mercury emissions, it was really only giving meaning and import to necessary and not giving sufficient import to the word appropriate, and that one could not know if it's appropriate to take a given action if one doesn't know the consequences of that action, i.e., if you don't know the costs of regulating, you can't know whether it's appropriate to regulate. Solicitor General's response was generally that all that EPA needed to do to know that it was conclude that it was appropriate was its analysis that technology existed that could control emissions of mercury and that is what made it appropriate. In defending the EPA rule, one argument that came up repeatedly was the extent to which EPA should receive deference. That is, insofar as the word appropriate does not reveal a precise meaning and does not provide the agency with precise guidance under Chevron, would EPA be due deference so long as it provided a reasonable interpretation. And there were some comments, including some early comments by Justice Kennedy, suggesting that the word appropriate is quite broad, is susceptible to a wide range of meaning, and that it might well be reasonable for EPA to focus on something like technological feasibility rather than cost in giving meaning to that. Another issue that came up that only made a brief appearance in the merits briefs but was developed more fully by at least one of the amici, is this question of whether or not EPA can claim to have engaged in reasoned decision-making under State Farm if it failed to consider costs. And that it's because generally under State Farm, it's understood that an agency to engage in reasoned decision-making must examine all of the relevant aspects of a given problem. And if you're talking about the potentially costly regulation of something from power plants, that one cannot say to have considered all the relevant factors if one has not considered cost. Related to that, petitioners maintain that there is evidence that Congress was particularly concerned about the regulation of power plants because power plants provide electricity, because there's concern about reliability, because there's a recognition that power plants are often built many, or last for decades, and that it can be costly to retrofit them and so on, that it was reasonable to provide special protection for power plants from regulation. And this argument was also heightened by the fact that, according to the petitioners, the cost of this rule, estimated $9.6 billion annually, are wholly disproportionate to the benefits from mercury reductions, which are estimated to be around $6 million annually. And related to that, there was some discussion of whether or not it was appropriate, or it would be appropriate, for EPA to rely upon the existence of co-benefits from regulation. In particular, EPA's claim is that the technologies that would be used to control mercury emissions will also reduce emissions of other pollutants, and that the reduction of those pollutants will produce benefits on the order of anywhere between $37 and $90 billion, with a B, dollars per year. And there was some discussion, primarily at the instigation of Chief Justice Roberts, about whether or not it's fair to evaluate the decision to regulate mercury as a hazardous air pollutant based on benefits that are obtained from controlling other pollutants that are, incidentally, also subject to regulation under other provisions of the Clean Air Act. Another issue that came up that was certainly interesting was this question of whether EPA could defend its decision because it has the ability to consider costs later in the process, that is, after making the initial threshold determination that it is appropriate to regulate mercury emissions. EPA then has the ability to consider costs in setting standards and in creating subcategories of emitting sources so as to potentially reduce the cost of compliance if there's a portion of emitters or a portion of power plants that would be disproportionately affected by such a rule. And then relate that if EPA could do that, is it a problem that EPA did not appear to have said that in the rulemaking? Chief Justice Roberts, again, raised several questions about whether or not some of the arguments that were being made in defense of EPA, and in particular being made by Justice Breyer, about the ability to consider costs later and to subcategorize sources of emissions, whether or not they could be relied upon if they were not in the record upon which EPA made its decision. I'm loath to ever give predictions about cases, but let me just say a few things about that. One is the fact that the Supreme Court accepted cert in this case and there was no circuit split certainly gave supporters of the EPA cause for concern. It takes four justices to grant cert, and this did not look like the sort of case that the court would have accepted had there not been at least four justices that were quite skeptical of the decision below, and perhaps the EPA's rule, or at least from what they knew about it from the cert petitions. Also, because the specific issue in this case is about the interpretation of specific language that applies to a particular set of emission controls under the Clean Air Act, it doesn't on its face implicate broader questions of administrative law that would normally command the court's attention. That said, you know, listening to the oral argument or reading the oral argument transcript and looking at the briefs, this case certainly could provide guidance for some broader questions that come up with some frequency in administrative law, such as the extent to which agencies should be expected to consider costs where they are not precluded from doing so, as well as what it really means to engage in reasoned decision-making when the authorizing statute does not provide specific guidance as to the inquiry that should be conducted. In terms of outcome, I think that the EPA probably felt pretty good about the defense made on its behalf yesterday. Having two advocates helps in the sense that allowing the second advocate to hear on the government side, hear all the three arguments up to that point and address the arguments to specific concerns that were raised earlier is certainly something that can be done quite effectively, and I think it was yesterday. In terms of what justices were thinking, Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ginsburg seemed fairly clearly in the government's camp, fairly willing to defer to EPA's judgment. Justice Alito and Justice Scalia seemed quite skeptical of the federal government's arguments and of the EPA. The justices that would seem to be in play in this case would be first Justice Breyer, who, while he offered some arguments that could be used to defend the EPA's action, also noted his concern about the possibility that regulatory costs could become excessive in relation to benefits, and in the past has suggested that as a default rule, agencies should be expected to consider costs, if not conduct an actual cost-benefit analysis when making regulatory decisions. Chief Justice Roberts seemed quite skeptical of the government and certainly seemed posed some difficult questions about what arguments the government could rely upon in particular, but I think there were other comments of his that suggest that he might well be in play including some comments he made about the possibility of EPA choosing either to consider costs or not consider costs based on EPA's interpretation of the word appropriate. As is so often the case, this decision may come down to Justice Kennedy. At different times in the argument, he seemed sympathetic to each side. Early on, he seemed somewhat hostile or asked some somewhat difficult or hostile questions to the petitioner's side, noted that appropriate would seem to be a very broad term that would be reasonably subject to EPA interpretation. But later on, he also noted when it was suggested that the EPA could address any concerns about costs by considering costs later in the process, he suggested that would be too late, that really the whole game here, or the whole ball of wax is determined by the threshold determination that additional regulation is appropriate, and that later consideration of costs really would not bring much to the table. And so we did not, I don't think we got a clear read on what Justice Kennedy is thinking, and he would certainly seem to be in play. It is worth remembering that both he and Justice Roberts did side with EPA in the cross-state air pollution rule case, EME Homer City, and in the latter part of the greenhouse gas case from last term. So they may be open to the EPA's arguments.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.